I don't usually intend to eavesdrop, but you know how it is. A few years ago, I was taking the train in Boston, and two women got on the train at one of the stops and stood right in front of me. And they continued to have their loud and joyful and boisterous conversation, and so how could I not listen to the snippets that wafted to my ears? At first, I wasn't really listening for the words. I was feeling the intention, the texture of their experience. It seemed that they hadn't seen each other for a very long time, and so they were catching up, seeing the delight and the joy and the care in each other's eyes. The train exited the tunnel and entered a bridge over the river. I was probably still on my phone, of course. I don't usually stare at the people I'm eavesdropping at. And so I wasn't really paying attention. But I heard one of the women turn to her friend and said, "Hey, look at that." And her friend completely ignored her and kept on talking in the same vein they had been. It was that moment when her friend turned to her and said, "No, look." Taking her hands, she placed them on the shoulders of her compatriot and turned her towards the window that was revealing one of the most beautiful sunsets I had seen in Boston. Red and orange, purples and yellows painting the sky, igniting the skyline as boats slipped up the river. I would have missed it, and probably her friend would have too, if she hadn't done that, hadn't helped her show up to that moment. I've been thinking a lot about that moment as we enter this month in which we're exploring the concept of showing up, mostly because I feel like, personally, it's difficult to show up to our lives. And I secretly wish I could have that woman following me around, helping me to take advantage of all of the moments I am inevitably missing. But that doesn't seem possible, does it? And so we're going to be exploring this concept of showing up in many ways, and today we're exploring what does it mean to show up into our lives. I think there are many different levels of showing up in our lives. I think the first level is actually experiencing the life that is unfolding on around us. I'm sure you've had the experience in which you look up or something happens and you realize a scene is unfolding in front of you that you had no knowledge of. You just weren't paying attention. You were in the situation. You were maybe present in the situation, but you were not present with it. It was happening like some background TV show, and you were just going on your merry way. Finding the ability to be present to what is, to those sunsets, to our friends, I think is that first level. And it can be so difficult to do, and yet so rewarding and, yes, sometimes painful to see what is in this life. But I don't think that's the only level of showing up. I think there's another level, moving from just experiencing the life that is floating on around us. The second level is not just passively receiving that, but bringing ourselves, actively embracing the life that is going on. When I was in search, which is the term that we ministers use to getting a job in a church, I had a little bit of trouble with this part, not just passively receiving, but actively embracing. I would spend a lot of time in Skype meetings and face-to-face meetings and conversations in which people would be asking me questions about what I would do as a minister, what I would do in their congregation, how I would respond to the circumstances that they put in front of me. And my internal monologue went something like, "Oh my God, what's happening? Do they like me? Why did they ask that question? What's that person thinking? Do I like them? Do I think I could work with them? Is this really happening?" And what I realized as that monologue was playing out in my head, myself in that moment had shifted. It move from the more expansive, the more joyful, the more humorous, the more experimental, the more dramatic, the more engaged, to something more diminutive, something more passive, something less there. I went from a self that embraced and brought my gifts to the moment to someone that was simply in the moment. And so I had to have a mantra for myself to help me move and break out of that spell. And it went something like this: Sean, it is time to be proactively yourself. To me, what that meant was moving from just receiving the moment to bringing myself into it, contributing the parts of myself that in that moment yearned to be alive, because that moment was made for me to not simply receive, but to embrace and contribute and change, as is every moment of your lives, an invitation to embrace and bring yourself, your gifts, to change the course of this world with your unique beauty. I think this second level leads so directly to the third level of showing up. If we move from just experiencing to embracing, the third level of showing up in our lives, I think, is something about being open to life's calling and luring. That in each moment, the forces of courageous love are conspiring with you to live out a dream of that world that could be, that world of beloved community in which all people are welcomed, all dignity is given, all oppression is vanquished. And in each moment, it is not so much just that we can bring our giftedness, we can also play co-conspirators to this movement of love in the world and find our unique way of helping love do its work. But here's the paradox in all of this showing up in our lives. To truly show up to our lives, we need to find meaning and worthiness there. But the only way to find meaning and worthiness in our lives is to show up in our lives. The only way to find meaning and worthiness in our lives is to show up. But the only way we can do that is if we find meaning. And of course, there are so many obstacles that this paradox brings to us. Of course, all of us have the normal life distractions, right? I mean, there are our schedules, our friends, our families, all of the things that need to get done, the to-do lists, the other people that seem to get in the way. What did Voltaire say about other people? Hell is other people? No. It's only sometimes true, right? And then we have these things in our pockets, or many of us do, these portals to distraction and disconnection. Of course, they offer us potential, and yet don't always live up to what they bargain for. Maybe for you, the only time in your life in which you have to yourself, in which you are free of distractions, is when you're here at church, tuning out whoever's speaking, looking out those beautiful windows. No shame. Your lives are busy. It's a great sight. Of course, there are those normal life distractions, and we can try to reduce them, but they will not go away completely. I think there is a more insidious and a deeper obstacle for us to showing up in our lives. And I think for me, the reason I don't show up in my life some of the time is I don't exactly think that life holds up its end of the bargain. My internal monologue goes something like this. This world kind of sucks. The people are annoying and imperfect. The government is lousy, and don't get me started on the weather. What the heck is it doing? Not to mention, the people sitting in front of me are too tall, and the person next to me is wearing perfume that I think I'm allergic to. And the drivers on the way to church this morning were terrible and blah, 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 blah. Have you ever thought something like this? Pema Chodron, the Buddhist teacher, compares this experience of this monologue to being barefoot and walking across blazing hot sand or across cut glass. Your feet are screaming. This is just too hard. It really hurts. It's terrible. It's too sharp. Turn back. Abort. Abort. And it's always when the pain gets to be too much that we, and I hope I can say we here, get a similar idea. What if I find a way to get rid of the pain? I just won't talk to her or him, and I won't listen to the news ever, or drive during rush hour, and if the weather is not ideal, I just won't leave the house. And maybe if we ban perfume totally everywhere in the world, then maybe nothing will be there to bother me. I'll just get rid of everything that annoys me, and then I'll finally get to show up to my life as the happy, content person I know I can be. If only I could find that perfect situation where I could show up, where the people are encouraging but not overbearing, where they're heartfelt but not too emotional, where they always show up on time, never have to leave early or check their phones when I'm saying something particularly poignant. The place where a sunset would always be so stunning that it would stop me in its tracks, where life's meaning and beauty would be served buffet style each day, no, each hour, no, each minute. If that was the case, I could show up. But you know as well as I that that world does not exist. We can't shut out the imperfections or the pain before we show up. We can't all wait for the right person or group or situation that will unlock us and allow ourselves to show up. Of course, those places do exist. Those people, those experiences happen. Those ones that unlock you, that allow you to be proactively yourself without even having to be proactive. And I know they do because I have experienced them, and I hope in your life you have those relationships and those places in which you can experience that too, because it is such a gift. But if we make this showing up in our lives, it's not me, it's you sort of problem, the result is that we close ourselves off from life, off from the pain, off from life itself. And then there's no way that we could show up for any of it. There's another level to this, these obstacles to showing up. When I took mental health first aid here at the church, it's this beautiful new movement in which they're taking the idea of first aiders, training people to respond to situations, not just physical ones anymore, but mental ones. So that if someone is experiencing a mental health emergency, you'll at least know what to do. When I was taking that course here, one of the many useful concepts I learned was how we classify an experience or behavior as a mental illness or a disorder. Because the experience or the disorder has to have a negative impact on a person's ability to experience fulfillment in life, to be classified as such. Which is sort of like saying, when does a behavior or experience detract from our capacity to show up, to experience life, to contribute ourselves and follow life's call? The difference between someone who uses alcohol and marijuana and someone who lives with a substance abuse disorder is not simply a matter of quantities and frequencies of use, but about how that use impacts the individual and their community's ability to show up. If drinking leads you to lash out and hurt those around you, that's a pretty good sign. But we all have our addictions and our habits that we're caught up in, that detract from life's fulfillment. Because it is our deepest yearning of each and every one of us to belong and embrace life, but it is so easy in this society to get caught up with anemic substitutes for this embrace. Because we're afraid. Because it's painful. Because it's hard. Lost in our work, we neglect the relationships that nurture us. Lost in our phones, we forget the nourishing practices that connect us to life's mystery and awe. Lost in our bodies, lost in our need to control our bodies, we forget the joy of having one. So what can we do to help us show up in our lives, to move up the levels of engagement, to actively embrace, to listen for life's calling? I think the first one we can do, and we can do it every day and every moment, is to practice alertness. So I'm going to do a little experiment with you all if you're ready. Let's pretend you've never seen an egg before. So what's this? You guys are more awake than the first service. They're like, an egg! I was like, no. So let's say you'd never seen an egg before, and someone gave you one and said, this is your breakfast, and walked away. I imagine you'd be rather confused. Do I bite it like a fruit? Do I smash it and then cook it all, shells and the inside alike? Wait, is there an inside? I think alertness is our capacity to crack life open like an egg. The nourishment is right there, all around us, inside of us, between us. We just need to know how to get into it. The poet David White has this poem that I love. Lenny read one of his poems earlier. It goes something like this. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. As if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witnesses to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants you freedom. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. The kettle is singing even as it pours you a drink, and the cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness and see the good in you at last. All the birds and creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything is waiting for you. I love that phrase. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity, because that experience of familiarity lures us closer. To be familiar is to find the sparks of kinship between moments and beings. If the paradox is that to truly show up in our lives, we need to find meaning and worthiness there, but the only way to find meaning and worthiness in our lives is to show up, then living inside that paradox, alertness awakens us to the meaning and the worthiness that abides already within the imperfections of this life. It is like having that friend that will turn us towards the sunset. It will be like cracking the egg of every moment to find the nourishment that is already there. And the good news is alertness, well, it's actually pretty simple. You just have to figure out how to pay attention to something, something small, something close in. And this practice of alertness invites us into a faithful practice of living as if. Alertness opens us to see the potential for life to contain meaning and love and potential. And so we start to live as if life is full of wholeness and joy and awe and mystery. And trusting that if we're open to it, we just might find it. Alertness allows us to kill the expectation of perfection and instead gift ourselves permission to show up as ordinary in the ordinary and experience the truth that as we take one step deeper into life's mysterious beauty, the next step becomes easier than the last. And the good news is that you don't have to go far to experience the fruits of this practice. Everything is waiting. I think the second thing we can do, if the first is practicing alertness, the second is to find the right shoes. Remember that metaphor that Pema Chodron gifted us, that of walking across cut glass? That experience of the pain and imperfections of the world being like walking across cut glass? Well, that comes from an 8th century Indian Buddhist monk, Shantideva. And Shantideva invites us that when we feel the imperfections or the pain of the world preventing us from showing up, rather than stopping the pain at its source by shutting ourselves from the pain, we just pull on the right pair of shoes. Shante Deva says, if you simply wrap protection around your feet, you can walk through the thorny terrain of life without getting as bloody. I love that. As bloody. I think each of us has practices and things we can do in our lives that are like putting on those shoes. Those practices like metta, meditation, that help you show up to life's imperfections, that help you grant grace to those around you for their failings, that allow you to see the beauty in life and the pain together and not shut it out. It's like putting on a good pair of shoes, protecting just your feet rather than covering the whole world with tarps of disconnection. The third thing we can do is expand the surface for connection. If you've been here any length of time since I've been here, you'll know that I'm a complete nerd. And since about grade 5, I've been obsessed with many things. But one particular thing is I've been obsessed with the size and composition of red blood cells. For those of you who don't remember any of your biology classes, red blood cells are a part of our blood that carries the necessary gases, the oxygens and the carbons from our lungs into every single cell of our being. Because we need to get this air in here, and not just in our lungs, but to every cell, because every cell of our body needs nourishment. And one of the things that has amazed scientists about red blood cells is their shape. If you've never seen the shape of a red blood cell, well, it kind of looks like a malformed donut. It's kind of like a ring that, instead of having the middle punched out like a donut, there's kind of a thin connecting layer. Kind of got a general shape in your mind. Donut, thin connecting layer. Kind of looks like a cough drop. And the beauty of red blood cells is that they have what scientists are amazed about. They have this beautiful ratio between surface area and volume. And what that means is that the surface of the cell is where the diffusion of oxygen and carbon happens. So they need to have quite a good space, quite a good surface, so that a lot of oxygen and carbon can be exchanged. But they also have a good volume inside the cell so that it can hold and retain the gases for its journey inside the body. And so that ratio of surface to volume allows our blood cells to nourish every single part of our bodies. And so what does this have to do with us? Well, I think a practice for all of us is to figure out how we intentionally increase the points of contact, the surface area of connection with life. Increasing the surface area from which life can diffuse its rejuvenating oxygen into us, and that we can expel the waste products that are just natural parts of living. That instead of gulping life down when it's handed to us on a platter and then holding our breath until we can find another, increasing the surface area for connection allows us to find a more steady breath and sip life in each day. And so each one of us can think about what are the practices in our lives and the ways that we can increase the connection with life that is rejuvenating. I sort of wonder if some of you are thinking, I don't want to spend more time with people. That's not what this is about necessarily. It's about those practices that put you in connection with life, with nature, with people, with books, with ideas, with beauty. Those practices that when you do them, feel like a breath of fresh air to your soul. To truly show up in our lives, we need to find meaning and worthiness there, but the only way to find meaning and worthiness is to show up. Everything is waiting for us. We just need to start close in, pull on our shoes, expand the surface for connection, and crack life open together. Amen, and blessed be.